Welcome to Zero Knowledge, a podcast where we explore the latest in blockchain technology and the decentralized web. The show is hosted by me, Anna.
And me, Frederick. In this episode, Anna sits down with the research team from Polychain Capital to chat about what their work looks like and what they're excited about.
Today, I'm sitting with the research team at Polychain. Guys, do you want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Karthik. Basically, I head research at Polychain. And I kind of got started in crypto when I started mining Bitcoin when I was 15. Got really into Bitcoin, then fell down the Ethereum rabbit hole. Got really into Ethereum. When I was in high school, I was really into math, so I went to Stanford. Studied math and like really got into crypto because of a cryptographer named Dan Bonet. And then naturally, I just, that just kind of strengthened my interest in crypto. And eventually, I like dropped out of school and joined Polychain as of to lead investments in different projects.
Cool.
Yep.
What about you?
Cool. I'm Nirash. I'm the other half of the research team at Polychain. So I got really interested in this space in high school, like roughly 4 to 5 years ago. I was sitting in like the back of English class, not really paying too much attention, and my friend told me about this new magic currency that you could, you know, make essentially with spare GPU hardware that people used to use to game. So that got me really interested, and I kind of got hooked at that point. And it was around the time that Bitcoin started getting really hard to mine. So it moved away from GPUs and onto like ASICs. Mm-hmm. So I got into the altcoin world more formally. So Litecoin and Dogecoin were kind of the first two things that I jumped into because those had really vibrant communities. And just through that, I was also learning to code at the same time. And so that was a lot of my early projects, if you look at GitHub, were like cryptocurrency related. So nice. I built like just a bunch of small little tools that for me personally like helped a lot. So built like a price tracking thing and a few tiny little applications in that world. But that kind of started it all. And fast forward to recently, I was in a lab under Andrew Miller at Illinois, who created this lab essentially to focus on cryptocurrencies. Mm. So it's the study of cryptocurrencies and everything related to it. So it's like the cryptography, the distributed systems, a little bit of game theory, and how they all work together in these systems. And that was it was a formal academic research lab under a security moniker, I guess. And was at Illinois for 2.5 years before dropping out, very recently actually, and was studying computer science there.
Cool. What does research mean at Polychain? What is that department? What is that?
So research kind of like encompasses everything that goes into probing the space and looking for interesting projects, interesting trends, and then translating those trends, projects, or observations into investable ideas. Mm. So this could be like we look for projects that people are already working on, or we look for developers that are building interesting projects on GitHub, and then we get them to start like more formal projects or companies. Or we just go like, Nirash and I have a really good background in research and like academic research. So we have like, a lot of connections in those areas. So we go directly to research teams that either work on projects, talk to them about their projects, and we try to find just interesting opportunities everywhere in the space. Mm. We've also started to do a lot of special projects internally as well. So I guess Polychain research is really branching out now. Personally, I love to do security audits. But something that Nirash and I talk about quite a bit is like, what does the future of investable, vehicles in crypto look like? And, you know, one interesting thing that we've been looking at are like non-fungible tokens. Mm-hmm. And like, what does it mean to invest in non-fungible tokens? How is return
generated?
So like, what does return look like from an investor's perspective? and how can you kind of facilitate a non-fungible token sale. Mm-hmm. So it's just very general ideas like that.
Do you guys think that you're going to be, like, are you going to be creating companies out of this? Is this like a company builder? Is this an accelerator? Like, what is it?
So it's not necessarily a company builder, what it is it's kind of like an incubator for a lot of different ideas. And many times we'll have a lot of people over in the office to discuss these things. So, we, you know, frequently have Truebit, so like Sina from Truebit, and many developers from around the space, and we discuss different projects, different protocols, different ways to sort of connect different projects together. You know, one of my favorite talks was when, Sina and I were talking about, cross-chain technologies and, Sunny Agarwal, who works at Tendermint Research.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Cool. And we were kind of talking about, like, what is wrong with the sidechain today? What are different approaches to sidechains? And evaluating the entire space, in general. So, like, there's, proofs of work, that was, developed by IOHK and Andrew Miller. That's a very interesting thing to sort of look at and analyze. But it's not necessarily creating new concepts. It's more or less looking at different concepts in the space, analyzing them, and then even putting them together with like different projects and seeing what comes out of that.
Hmm. Niraj, what's your favorite? What's your story of a favorite sort of jam session or outcome?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a particular one that was like. That I remember in my head, but, you know, generally I just think that the ideas that the one-off ideas that maybe aren't related are also really good seeds for new ideas. So even just internally when we're talking about a single topic, you're like, oh, what about this? And you go think about it and some really interesting topics come about. And so just out of, these, like, I guess you could call them like jams, like bull sessions. I've like thought a lot about, think like a bunch of different topics and have written a few things. So one that's come out of one of these is like the concept of merging two blockchains. Mm. So how do you make sure that the state doesn't get affected? What happens when they're running two different crypto systems? How does that look on like a price and coin ratio? Does that look like a traditional company merger? Does it change in this crypto world? And so just out of that, I think these really like sci-fi concepts, excite me a lot, and trying to hit at an answer almost, is a really like fun study.
What's an example of the merging of two blockchains? Can you go deeper on that? I'm just curious, like, cause like, I mean, I'm familiar with like bridges and like multi-chain, but tell me more about that. Would you consider the merging of two blockchains like a multi-chain?
So potentially, okay. I would kind of talk about the concept of merging chains as one in which you're trying to acquire or I guess combine assets with some other blockchain. So just
not
like
purely transferring. It's like not you, purely you're actually are you actually trying to merge, like are you trying to take qualities of one and bring it into the other?
Exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. So as opposed to something where you're transferring assets from one blockchain to another, yeah. This would be like the two blockchains become the same.
Wow.
There's a
few there'll be multiple interactions happening over like
exactly.
Wow.
And so there's a few ways that looks. One could be, let's take the example of like Dogecoin and Ethereum if those wanted to merge. They're not exactly compatible, but one thing you could do is literally take Dogecoin and have a system where Ethereum holders burn some amount of tokens, or I guess Ethereum holders kind of raise money or set aside some tokens that say, okay, 6% of all Ether should go towards funding the development of merging Dogecoin into Ethereum. Mm-hmm. And then what Dogecoin holders would do is burn their Dogecoin verifiably, and that would give them some Ether in return. Mm-hmm. And the idea is eventually the Dogecoin blockchain would come to like a graceful termination, and people would just use the main Ethereum blockchain, and then the states would merge. That's one. You know, another one possibly is both Dogecoin and Ethereum fork together to basically become the same chain.
Wow.
And then the assets on both chains are cross compatible. Yeah. Yeah. So there's like a lot of cool things here. It's like very far and it's a very sci-fi application, but I find the concept like really, really interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. I'd like to hear more about that. So what's an average day for research at? What do you guys do? Like do you just read a lot? What are you looking at? What are you doing every day?
Yeah, so it's a combination of things ultimately, and it's kind of hard to say what the same day looks like because it's always different.
Okay.
But it's everything from meeting project teams to like jamming with our portfolio teams on kind of like what Karthik mentioned, just like really exciting new use cases and thinking through the math behind everything. There's obviously an element of reading a lot, whether that's the underlying source material, and cause there's like always something new to learn in every field. In addition to like new white papers that we might see and kind of try to see what's exciting and getting a sense for like in that space, what should we be looking at and what should we not be looking at? And, additionally, just like meeting smart people in the space and making sure we're on top of everything.
Yeah, no, I think that actually like, encapsulates a lot of it. But for example, what I did today was, I had a call with a couple of my friends that are researchers back at Stanford, essentially what they're working on and what like sort of popped up on the radar. But actually the majority of today, I just like to pick a certain topic and then sort of think about that a bit more. And like sometimes I'm working on more long-ranging projects. So like right now I'm thinking a lot more about zero knowledge. Which is actually
like this podcast.
Exactly.
Cool.
It's like the title of the podcast. But essentially like what I'm super interested in is like what are the more like efficient ways to create zero knowledge proofs? And like what can you create efficient zero knowledge proofs for? So like one thing that I've been thinking about today was and I actually plan on talking to a lot of our portfolio projects about this to sort of incorporate it. But essentially, like, if you can create a zero knowledge proof, like Zcash does, on transaction data. So essentially, like, if you have, like, say, like, every block is kind of like a function where you have the pre-state, which is the pre-Merkle root, and then the post-Merkle root. And then you have a sender, a receiver, the value transferred, and then the, like, two account Merkle trees. And you only want to like, and for Zcash, you only want to, reveal what the two Merkle roots are. But you don't want to reveal any of the other stuff, which is considered like your witness. Mm. And you want to be able to prove that, all right, this is like the past Merkle root and this is the present Merkle root. And here's like a little proof using my witness. And so now you know that the transaction occurred, but you don't know how much I transacted or to who I transacted to. The question is, can you actually build an equivalent, like form of that for like computation? Which is like, for example, scripts and like, could you have one for say Bitcoin scripts and then looking into say more complex Ethereum scripts? Does it work there as well? And I think there are some pretty interesting, like, thought processes and things to think about there. And a lot of times, a lot of this thinking goes straight into discussions that we have with our portfolio projects. So we have a portfolio project that's trying to exactly solve this. And, you know, they're really smart people from Berkeley. And actually, I know one of them from my undergraduate years as well.
Cool.
Yeah, it's just a lot of, it's very flexible, I guess. That's how I would put it.
So you're working, you just sort of mentioned this, you're working with academia. You're actually like going and working maybe with a bunch of universities or groups in those universities. And then you're also working with these portfolio companies.
Yeah.
Are you acting as like a bridge between them? Do you see like a huge distinction between the way that these two entities work?
Actually, what's really interesting is that there isn't as big of a distinction as like between how academic groups work and how our portfolio companies work. Because like in academia, you try to meet other academic teams and like you try to bounce ideas off of one another. And that's sort of the nice part about how organic academia is. And what's interesting about our portfolio projects, but more or less teams in the crypto space, is that's also kind of how they work. So there are different portfolio projects that have a lot to do with other portfolio projects. Like, and whenever I meet, the One Protocol team, many times a lot of our discussions center around Definity and sort of the security, like the combinatoric security of Definity, and the use case of Definity for One Protocol and stuff like that. So there's just a lot of stuff to like bounce around and new ideas to arrive at, but like looking at the interoperability of like different projects.
Cool. Yeah. You've mentioned a couple types of protocols or types of sort of domains within the space that are interesting to you guys. What I'm really curious about to hear is like what's coming up future-wise? Like what, not only what you're looking at right now, but like what is on the horizon in your opinion? And are there any projects that you think are sort of like heading in the right direction or wrong direction or? You probably don't want to say wrong direction if it's your portfolio of companies.
Yeah. actually, I kind of want to give a shout out to a project that I've always sort of liked. First, I'll probably start off by saying that in terms of trends that I see, over the summer, I was really interested in different consensus protocols, and that's actually what led us to look into Definity in like basically the first part of the summer. And, you know, in retrospect, that was actually a really interesting sort of find. I think that what I look for actually like changes very rapidly throughout the year. So, like the fall, I think that we were looking for a lot more interesting sort of like, we were looking at sharding and we were looking at sort of different features that could increase the performance of our projects. And, a huge theme there was state channels, and there have been many projects that have since like risen to tackle that problem. And now I think that, well, the thing that's kind of, that I always sort of love thinking about is privacy. Okay. I think that there's just a lot of kind of, misunderstanding on like the things that are being done today to achieve privacy on different chains. One thing is that like bulletproofs on Bitcoin is sort of an excellent paper. Then I guess, people are always trying to find better ways to do zero knowledge proofs, but more efficiently. But my favorite sort of privacy project to date has to be Mimblewimble.
Wow.
I actually started following Mimblewimble like a couple months after the paper came out on Bitcoin node, the IRC node, for the Bitcoin chat. And I, actually like really enjoy sort of the organic, fundamental approach that they take to, you know, building this like interesting security measure or this privacy measure. You know, there's a blockchain that's being built right now called Grin that is trying to implement this from the ground up as well. So,
Like smile.
Yeah. So okay. GRIN.
Cool.
It's not really well known, but it's completely, built by anonymous developers. And it uses a lot of like, you know, Harry Potter mumbo jumbo, but I think that kind of adds to sort of, the kind of the vibe of the entire project.
Wow.
And I think that, it's really interesting in terms of the, like the pure crypto work that, they're doing there.
Cool. Thanks for that, by the way. That's awesome. What about you, Naresh?
So pretty generally, I find like a couple of verticals like really interesting. So one is like the whole notion of like crypto banking almost. So like Karthik mentioned earlier, one of our portfolio teams, One Protocol, builds like staking infrastructure. So once we move to these like these blockchains that support proof of stake and have a different way of interacting with these systems, it's going to require some infrastructure for people to use. So I'm a big fan of that project and kind of just the traditional finance stack being removed. So an example I give is if you look in traditional finance, the market returned, you know, north of 10% this year at least, but savings accounts accrue less than 1% interest in a year. And, you know, the banks take that difference. Mm. And so when you think about what happens when you like open source these financial protocols and like make them entirely like free and free of middlemen, I think a lot of interesting applications can come about. And it's having a blockchain is just a native, really interesting way to like interact with these things. And more generally, just really research-focused projects that take advantage of some fundamental new change in computer science. So example of a project I give is Filecoin. I think Filecoin has taken a really good approach with regards to storage, and they've developed this really novel proof of useful work. You know, in Bitcoin, the work is in some ways useless. Mm-hmm. It doesn't accomplish some sort of stated purpose outside of securing the chain. Proof of useful work in Filecoin, they've developed these really novel, interesting storage proofs where you can prove to some system that like I've held a file for some time. And took a lot of academic research. I remember reading the original paper back in, I think it was like 2014 or 2015. And they've come a long way since, kind of developing all that. And from like, it's kind of like nascent early days to now, there's a lot more like rigor, academic rigor backing it all. And so that's an example of an ecosystem and frankly, like system that is just, will open up a ton of possibilities for developers to build on.
Hmm. So for you, it's storage. Decentralized storage. We actually did a series on decentralized storage.
So oh, really?
We're also very fascinated by that. That's cool. Is there a project, is there a specific project that's coming up that maybe is a little less well-known that gets you excited?
I guess going off of what we were just talking about, useful proof of work and like file storage, there's just been a lot of, I guess, research by the Filecoin team to build these proofs for like, are you actually storing this? And how do you, you know, prove this over time? And so there's, I guess, an interesting paper coming out called Verifiable Delay Functions, VDFs, out of Dan Bonet's lab at Stanford.
Oh, nice.
So I think that's a pretty interesting piece of research that's up and coming.
Cool.
And kind of just related to his point, there's this really good paper by some similar authors. I think it was Benedict Boons at Stanford that wrote a paper on proofs of delay and how to do publicly verifiable randomness, which solves a problem in security generally that we haven't been able to really solve. And we haven't really had like a huge need for it, but it's now that we have blockchains, it's kind of come about as a new interesting area. Karthik alluded to it earlier, but one work that I've been really interested by is the notion of a proof of work.
Yeah, you said that. That's...
So it's a paper out of IOHK in Andrew Miller's lab, and the concept of this is it's basically a Bitcoin native central way for it to kind of make it really easy for an SPV node to verify the state of a blockchain. So some of the problems with SPV nodes is that you have in some way have to trust some sort of centralized party to get that initial list of Merkle roots on the blocks. This is a way, basically it kind of uses a skip list, computer science algorithm or data structure that allows for kind of easier searching. And it uses that concept to generate basically a sublinear way to query a blockchain. And so now that's huge for SPV nodes because the cost to basically submit a proof saying, hey, I want, you know, these transactions that match this block, and a miner will get that, create a proof and send it back to you. And then you can verify it, is huge and kind of unprecedented amounts of like abilities. Now that you can move all these things onto like a mobile client, you can verify state that you wouldn't been able to verify before.
Oh, cool. So it opens up this whole new world of potential projects, potential ideas, yeah. I guess. This is research at Polychain. Like what's coming up in terms of the company, in terms of the group, in terms of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so we are actively hiring across a number of roles. I mean, for us, particularly research. We're looking for kind of talented people, typically from a cryptography background, that really enjoy the cryptocurrency space and love just like diving into deep problems and reading. And so the best way to do that is just reach out. Our website is polychain.capital, or you can reach out to one of us individually, and happy to answer any questions.
Very cool. Well, listen, guys, thanks so much for talking with me in very short notice. Thanks for sitting down, and it was really cool to hear a little bit more about what you guys are doing. To our listeners, I want to say thanks for listening.